Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again.
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welch.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
This is the Fantasy Baseball Prospect Podcast. It is Prospect One. I'm your host, Chris Welch, who you can find on Twitter, the socials, at IsItTheWelch, and over at InThisLeague.com, where we've got the top 500, where we've got the dynasty ranks. We've also got GroupMe rooms, access, first-year player, international on them, P1 ADPs, prospect ADPs, and just a ton more. InThisLeague.com, that is a Patreon. Come and sign up today. Have access to me, the amazing prospect community. Man, they're popping off right now, like, of course, and all of the work that I do. Today on the episode, we've got a great one. We're continuing our prospect rank series. We did the top 10 with Eric Cross. So we're going 11 to 25 with Chris Clegg. Yes, Dynasty Dugout and Toolshed's own Mr. Chris Clegg. As luckily, we'll be able to really focus on the names as the ranks expand. The next series, where it'll be like 26 through 50, we're not going to talk about every single player. It'll start to get, you know, a little bit cherry picking. And again, we are talking about the relative players that are kind of in these ranges. This one, though, luckily, we pretty much get to talk about everybody. So we are talking about prospects 11 through 25, who I have, who Chris has, how they float around. There's some differences. You know, there's like some core players that show up. There's some things I think that like Chris and I are like lockstep on, you know, and then there's Spencer Jones with me, you know, how I am with Spencer Jones. Like that's that individual one. But it's a really great conversation. I think you guys will enjoy it talking about the fantasy side of prospects 11 through 25. You guys can also find some of the stuff we're doing here on Prospect One over on the In This League YouTube channel. If you haven't checked that out yet, youtube.com/InThisLeague. And there's even a playlist for Prospect One. So any of the things that I do, like this episode, will be cut up. Like the, I think I have the Eric Cross one or pieces of the Eric Cross one. All the episodes that we do, I will be putting clipped versions or, you know, in this case, for this episode, I might stagger just a couple of the prospects in there, but go over to youtube.com/InThisLeague. Make sure you're subscribed to it. You can get notified. Sometimes people like the, you know, the visual. You could just see us talk. I do try to put like player pages up and stuff that you can look at. So go and check it out today. Subscribe. It's free on the YouTube. Just wanted to make sure we were starting to put more stuff up on there. I'm getting ramped up for the season. I know you guys are as well. Everything is starting to pop off. I'm still going to try to drop a little first-year player international episode, a little bonus episode for everybody. I know some of those have started to happen. I'm excited to get through the rank series, and we are looking, which I'm hopeful to do in this next week, is start up and get done the P1 ADPs, because I will be traveling out to Las Vegas on a Fantasy Pros trip. Then when I return, holy hell, it is going to be jumping right into the thick of it because camps open like the day before I get back and the day that I get back. So I'm going to be starting out at camps the following week, going to be out a ton looking to, you know, see all the guys. I've already gotten to see Leo DeVries and Ethan Salas, but get to see these guys starting full workouts, you know, going to a place like the Brewers and seeing Jesus Mate. Like that's obviously going to be a big target, but just, you know, any nuggets that I can give you, I will be out at camp, so I know we're all getting excited. I'm getting jacked up for it. So just make sure you're subscribed and locked into everything. This episode is brought to you by Sid's Graphs with a Chris Sale Cy Young signing. You betcha. You guys can find some of the most unique and incredible stuff that he got done with Chris Sale over at Sid's Graphs. You can find him on the socials and eBay, and we'll just tell you a little bit more after. Let's get into it. Chris Clegg from the Dynasty Dugout. He is here. No more time to waste. Let's jump into it. We're talking prospects 11 through 25 in the grand scope of the fantasy prospect world.
Say, I like you. I like you so much, I'm going to make you my partner. All you have to do is find the gold, and I'll share it with you 50-50.
Prospect One.
He is Chris Clegg on the Twitter at Chris Clegg, M-I-L-B. Founder of Dynasty Dugout. Of course, you can check him out on the Patreon, as you should, and over on Toolshed, a bunch of other places. One of my dear friends and one of the best in the industry and the prospect world, Mr. Chris Clegg. What's up, brother?
Oh, man. Not much, Welsh. Good to be back on with you. Good to talk ball as we get closer to baseball being back. Man, some cold weather ready for it to go. Had snow for two times in the last 2 weeks, and that's not... doesn't happen often in Sacramento. I've had it in 3 years. So prior to recent, so I'm ready for warm weather. I'm ready to be at a field somewhere where it's warm and watching baseball, but we're almost there. This month has flown by. It's almost February. Can't believe it.
It's crazy. And, you know, people wonder, like, why is all the baseball in Florida and Arizona? And it's like, because it's never any of that. We never have snow. I will say this is the first day in months upon months. It's actually raining here in Arizona. So all the prospects that are out here, they're coming every single day. I know guys like Travis Bazana has been here. Guys like Braden Montgomery just got in. The whole Padres camp, they actually had a camp going on. Ethan Salas, Leo DeVries, all these guys are already out here. They'll be taking a break today because it's out raining and maybe just hitting the gym. While we are going to be hitting the prospect ranks, we are going to be going prospects 11 through 25. Your cohort, Mr. Eric Cross, did the top 10. We're going to be talking about 11 through 25 here. Obviously, Clegg and I are going to have, you know, some differences in probably names. I will say it's funny. In preparation, I had mixed around some show stuff and I got to see like your top 50. You and I, for the most part, I'm going to say this when like you don't have a guy or two I have in the top 25 and I don't have a guy in the top 25, a guy or two that you don't have. But still, for the most part, we're kind of in the same general ish area up to 30, even if like some names are pushed down and then things start to pick up. The first question before we get into the names here and we kind of talk through is like, where do you think the barriers are? Top 10 is pretty core. There's not crazy differences. Maybe there is like one or two guys that are in the top 10 that aren't in another person's top 10. Usually that rectifies by the top 15. Me and Cross noticed that. We're like, for the most part, I think we had everyone in the top 10, at least in the top 15. Things are going to open up soon. Everybody's ranks are different. But what's your kind of thesis real quick on 11 through 25 as far as the prospect goes? Do you think those are more towards the top half, closer to the top 10? Or do you think maybe these guys are closer to the like even 50 range? Because people get really caught up in like numerical stuff. I've always said I felt like prospect 20 to prospect 50 right now, there's a pretty low gap in between. Where do you think that gap maybe starts and ends as far as like that 11 through 25? Closer to the top 10 or closer to that 50 range?
Yeah, so I'm kind of in agreement with you. Like, I think that after the 15th spot or so, like it kind of opens up for me, like that third tier drops down to like the 27 spot. And then it pretty much opens up through 50. Like after that, you can go several different ways and you know, there's some arms to like, there's definitely some bats to like, but yeah, I think after that, like after the 20, so it'd be like 28 through 50 for me is kind of wide open in a tier of its own.
Well, pitching, you're kind of even mentioning pitching is going to be a very interesting conversation here too, because something you're going to see listeners going in here is it does feel like, especially for your rank specifically, Clegg, is that there might be more high-end pitchers than in years past, or at least you are valuing pitchers high. Usually like in the prospect world, dynasty world, I think James kind of does the same. He might pick a guy or two that goes really high, but me and him both tend to kind of regress pitching a tiny bit just because of the volatility of pitching prospects and stuff. But, you know, we are going to talk about in this range of 11 through 25 that you've got, I believe it's three pitchers that are in this 11 through 25. And that's not counting, you know, the top guy you already have like Roki in there. So there's some big names we're going to talk about in pitching values. But Let's jump in. If people are checking it out, remember we have these on the YouTube now. If you want to see some of this in video form, you can, where we'll be sharing some of the ranks just again visually, but we're talking about it. Coming in at number 11, I've got Leo DeVries. You've got Max Clark. At 12, I've got Andrew Painter. So that is my first non-Roki pitcher, by the way. So I don't have any other pitchers besides Roki in the top 10 here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
No one asked you anything ever, so whomever's name is
In This League.
Why don't you take a letter opener and stick it in your skull?
Hey. You've got Emmanuel Rodriguez. 13, I've got Jackson Jobe. You've got Walker Jenkins. 14, Felton Celston. You've got Kobe Mayo. And at 15, we'll stop there. I've got Bryce Eldridge. You've got Dalton Rushing. So even though I said, like, hey, we're kind of close, none of those names really translate across the board. Let's start with Max Clark for a second on your end. I have Max quite a bit higher. I have Max in that upper tier. You did say that down to 15 might kind of be a tier. Do you believe Max Clark could be interchangeable with, let's just arbitrarily say, like 8 or 7?
Yeah, I certainly believe that. I mean, like, you look at the top 10 and, you know, there's certainly some guys. Yeah, I mean, you've got the upside guys. Like, I've got a Walcott up there. I mean, Christian Campbell's showing, like, he's certainly vaulted way up, and he's much closer to the bigs too. But, like, then I could make an argument for Max Clark over, like, Samuel Basayo. Like, there's no doubt in my mind I could do that. Or even, like, a Jackson Jobe or Andrew Painter, like, in that range, absolutely could argue Max Clark there. I mean, he's so safe, just given his hit tool. He's a really solid glove in center field. And I believe the power is going to come around. He's been putting in a lot of work this offseason to add bat speed, add a little weight and power. And if that's the last tool to develop, then he's going to be all right, because the other four tools are definitely there with Max Clark. And typically, power is the last thing we see come. I mean, he's 20 years old. He just played his first full pro season. So I wouldn't be shocked if Max Clark became one of the top prospects in the game, if not the top prospect in the game over time, just given the pedigree and the tools that are there.
So that's kind of my take on it, is, like, I think the hit tool is a lot higher than I think some people are giving credit for. I think the guy can blaze. He is a student of the game. You know, if you would say it, he's in the lab. That dude is all about finding all of that underlying stuff. How can he get better? How can he up barrel rates? What is the launch angle doing to his actual approach? Like, I think he's got the makings of, like, an advanced hitter in a lot of different ways. And I've said this over time, I kind of see some Corbin Carroll in him. You know, like, there's even some bat path stuff, kind of getting across his body to make sure he's hitting for contact. But I definitely can also see that Max Clark is going to be able to, like, optimize and probably going to get bigger than Corbin. I don't even think that's a question. He's going to just, like, physically, muscular, get bigger than Corbin Carroll. But it's all going to be about that big power development. When you look at your list 11 through 25, you got some, you know, some big names. I mean, specifically, you know, Emmanuel Rodriguez, who you have at 12. Do you think Clark has the highest upside of every player here? And that is pushing some big pitchers that we're going to talk about here in a second. We haven't got to that pitching barrage that you've got, but do you think Clark is, like, maybe the highest fantasy upside of your 11 through 25? Or do you think, you know, down in the 20s when we start talking, who I have at 11, Leo DeVries, could be one of those players? You have Leo at 20. I have him right outside of that top 10.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument for it. I mean, personally, I would say that, like, Emmanuel Rodriguez probably has more upside, obviously a lot more risk just given the hit tool and the injuries that we've seen with Rodriguez. I think Jenkins is honestly kind of a similar player in some sense to Clark, so I'd put him right there with him. And then obviously with DeVries, as you mentioned, like, he's so young, and what he's been able to do at his age is extremely impressive. So I think you can make that argument that the upside is there, but I'd still say that Emmanuel Rodriguez probably has the highest ceiling of this group for me in my 11 through 25, but I think that Clark and Jenkins are pretty close as well, just especially if the power comes along. But yeah, that's an interesting little group right there in my rankings, I think.
So, I mean, and I agree with you inherently because I have Jenkins next to Clark, but they're just higher. They're inside of my top 10. So I think like your assessment is kind of where I'm at in the same front. It's just going to end up about being some value. And if you're putting pitchers on top there, just curious on Leo real quick, we're going to kind of eliminate as we're going through here. I have Leo higher, so we don't need to talk about it when you get to 20, but what was the differentiating factor for, especially when you think about Leo's upside, you know, you get to see him in the AFL. I've seen a bunch of him. Third youngest player of all time to hit a homer in there, switch hitting, good contact. We can get overhyped with some of these guys sometimes, but like, what was the factor where he sits below, let's say a guy like Dalton Rushing specifically, who you have at 15, you got Rushing. I don't even say arguably high. It's just, you're very high on him. He's going into the outfield, which is a really good spot. We know there's massive power potential with him, but like from a rank perspective, is this more based on proximity? Or do you think there's a cap to Leo's upside?
I don't think there's a cap to Leo's upside. I just believe Dalton Rushing has one of the best bats in the minors. You know, the questions of how does he fit in? I think that's still to be debated. I mean, it's the Dodgers we're talking about. So that obviously throws a wrench into things. And we've seen how they've treated other prospects before, just struggling to find at bats. And if this offseason is any indication, I do worry that Rushing is going to struggle to find time in Los Angeles. But the bat's just superb. I mean, since he debuted, the ex-Wobicon is like one of the best in the minors. He absolutely scorches balls, hits them at ideal launch angles. It's one of the best approaches. Like, I think he's chased below 20% every year. And the contact's improved too. Like, we saw pretty good growth in contact rates this year. It's just, my question with him is still, how does he fit into that puzzle in LA? Does he trade it or is he just a backup catcher? Like, that would hurt his value for sure. Now, DeVries certainly has the upside to pass him, I think, just given the pedigree, given the skills that we've seen at his age. Rushing's obviously a few years older than DeVries. Actually, pretty substantial. Rushing's, what, almost 24? DeVries is 18. So, pretty good gap there in age. And the crazy thing is, like, knowing the Padres and knowing the Dodgers, like, they could debut at the same time.
I knew you were going to say that. You're 100% right. Like, don't be surprised if they're within like 12 months of debut, regardless of age.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm just extremely high on Rushing's bat and the potential there. But everything I saw, DeVries in the AFL was really good. We were at the game where he had a new high max EV, hit 110. And a big game that game. It was the game that absolutely, like, dump started pouring rain, which was odd, you know, in the AFL game. But
it's the last day there was probably rain until today.
Legit. Yeah, that's crazy, but you're probably right. So yeah, I mean, DeVries certainly is someone that I believe, and I think the hit tool is real advanced for his age and the power is coming, and there's no reason I don't think that he couldn't sit in a similar spot to Walcott. I'm sure a little more comfortable with Walcott just given the athlete, the power, and I think that, like, I look at Walcott and I see, like, easy number one prospect potential. Not that I don't see that with DeVries. It's just I'd like to see a little bit more out of him.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not
in this league.
You're
in this league.
I'm the dude.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Get it! I'm also more comfortable with Walcott because I've seen him much more than I've seen DeVries at this point. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think there's a fair argument for DeVries over Rushing. I'm just irrationally high on Dalton Rushing's bat.
Well, what's interesting about the Walcott thing is, like, Walcott, though, exemplifies some more worrisome traits, but also some bigger traits. Like, it's interesting to hear that because just like Walcott's swing and miss, like I've likened it very much to like Fernando Tatis Jr. a lot. Like, you know, if you have those slow incremental changes, like, he definitely has like the skill set where, you know, if you get that down to like 20%, he's going to be a first round fantasy talent. But like, there is more inherent risk in that where that's not there with Leo. One of the things that I'm also poking around about that with is that you identified like 15, top 15 kind of being that core of the first round, and then it kind of opens up and Rushing is 15 and Leo is outside of that. So like, when we're talking about the upside, the plays and the values, I kind of wanted to ask you, you know, are you cool in a world where someone's like, I want Leo's upside over Dalton rushing, except you also identified 15 as like a breaking point of rank difference. So these guys are like, do you really view them as a tier difference? Or kind of looking at the names, you're like, oh yeah, maybe these are closer. And you could go, if you're a rebuilding team, a guy like Leo DeVries with the upside of being a top five overall prospect is sitting out there from a couple, you know, in a couple years from now. But I'm just kind of blabbering on here. What do you think about the tier difference between rushing and Leo?
Yeah, I actually have him in the same tier. I misspoke when I said 15. Like, rushing is the first player in tier three, like on the rankings. So like DeVries is in that same tier, which I'm a big proponent of tier-based drafting. Like, I think people get so fixated on the number.
Totally.
Like, they would say Dalton rushing's 15, Leo DeVries is 20, so I have to take Dalton rushing before. Like, to your point, like what you're saying, like, I agree with you. Like, if you're, you're certainly looking to be younger, if you're looking for the upside, like, that's what you're playing for. Like, you can shop in that same tier and be fine. Like, I would have Leo DeVries. I have him in that tier. I've got Zaire Hope towards the bottom of that tier three. Like, there's like a Chase DeLoud or a Kevin McGonigal on that tier, like all kind of different archetypes of players, but all present similar value. And they potentially have different floors versus ceiling. Like, rushing, I think, is a higher floor. DeVries probably the higher ceiling play here. So, yeah, I mean, I'm totally on board with looking at DeVries over rushing in the right context.
Okay, that's good to hear, because like, I view Leo as like, this is like a potential 2020 guy. And those are kind of the archetype measures for players. Like, we sometimes say it like offhandedly, but like, if this guy is like a 2020 type of player, then that more exemplifies the five tools. I don't see Dalton rushing being that. Like, rushing, I'm really not sure he's a high batting average guy either. Like, is he a 30 home run hitter? That's a definite possibility with that big power, and that bat might play even higher. I will say with Leo, they have a camp going on, and I actually was able to sneak over there. They had public access because they had a fantasy camp going on. Shout out to Jake Peavy, my guy, Jake Peavy. But they were running just full camp. So everyone, Cash Mayfield, Boston Bateman, Kavion Tears, they're all there. Leo Salas. Leo looks thinned out. Looks like that guy has spent an off season of maybe, I don't know, some baby fat type of thing, but like, he looks thinner in a good way. And that's the type of thing where I look at him, I'm like, oh, this is a guy that is going to keep that body up and run. And I've already liked the hit tool. And obviously, like, in that body development change, sometimes, you know, you got to make sure they're keeping up that big power. Sometimes when guys, when you already have like a contact based approach that generates power. And if you do fluctuate in weight, sometimes I can fluctuate with some of the power, but I think he's doing all the right things at his age that you want. I just think the sky's the limit with Leo DeVries. At 12 and 13, I've got Painter and Job. Did you have Painter and Job in your top 10?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So that's three pitchers you've got in your top 10. Since we're going to move into the pitcher thing here, let's actually just do it right now, and then we'll backtrack to these two big power hitters after. What is your philosophical stance as far as pitching for fantasy goes? Obviously, we kind of talk in this broad head-to-head roto term here. I know you know, sometimes there's points, you know, points is going to differentiate pitching here. OBP is going to differentiate some of the hitters and stuff like that. But just like a general 5x5 standpoint, what's your thesis on the investment of pitchers? Because everyone's always screamed at us, like, you don't get pitching prospects when you're rebuilding and pitching comes last and stuff like that. But one thing I will say, and I've held pretty strong to, pitching is one of the most difficult things to do in dynasties. Like, I have found it across the board that the hoarding and cost of higher end pitching and pitching prospects is such a premium that there's an advantage to have a little bit of a push on pitching. So instead of being the guy that I don't take a pitcher eight rounds and then...
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says...
In this league.
Hey, Farva, what's the name of that restaurant you like with all the mozzarella sticks?
In this league.
Oh! You know, having investment in the top guys, it's not as easy as the flick of a wrist and just trading some mediocre Nolan Arenado bat and going get a top pitching prospect. I've always found it difficult in every format. So there is a value, but I don't have a high investment value, at least as you do in some of these pitchers. So get your take on, obviously you got Painter and Jobe at the top, but 15, 16, and 17, or I'm sorry, 16, 17, and 18 for you are high-end pitchers. Or no, I'm sorry, 17, 18, and 19. I can't get it right. You have Bubba Chandler at 17, Chase Dolander at 18, and Noah Schultz at 19. So that's five pitchers, six pitchers, including Roki Sasaki, inside your top 20. So let's hear it on the pitching prospects.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of value in having a high-end pitching prospect for either trade purposes, or it's because I think there's a clear top five when we're talking about pitching prospects, looking at Painter, Jobe, Bubba Chandler, Noah Schultz, and missing one, blanking.
Got Dolander?
In front of me. Dolander, yeah. So looking at those, I mean, I think that's a clear top five for me. Now, not everybody will value Dolander there, but I think Dolander's the best pitching prospect the Rockies have seen, to be frank, and I think that he can beat Coors Field. What does that look like? Maybe it's not the elite numbers that we could see out of a Painter or a Jobe, but I do think that Dolander's going to put up extremely good seasons with the Rockies.
This is, look, I'm sorry, I want to interrupt you. This is including Sasaki or not Sasaki?
That's not including Sasaki. So six including Sasaki, if you want.
Are you doing the same thing as Cross? Because I kind of pushed back where he was like, I don't want to rank those guys, but I was like, but this is the one that is a minor league contract. So technically, like, he should be in there by technical terms. I'm with you guys that, like, you know, the guys that signed the major league contract, like, I don't want to put them in first year player, but technically Sasaki should. So are you just not doing it for that, like, kind of same international high-end reason?
Yeah, normally I don't put the international pros already in the prospect rankings. Like, I put his right up in the FYPD just for the information, but I just haven't put in recent years. Like, I left out, like, Yamamoto, because if the guys are going to pitch in the majors instantly, and right or wrong, I mean, like, they're rookie of the year eligible, they are prospects. So yeah, I don't know. I just, stacking a Sasaki up against the others, like, just don't love doing. And I think, like, it's clear number one, and he graduates so fast. But yeah, I'm not including him for a couple years, like those guys that are like foreign professionals that come over. So
yeah, I get it. He just did sign a minor league deal technically. But the reason I also brought that up more importantly is then I agree with you, because Dolander is technically my number six starting pitcher in the minors with Sasaki, but without Sasaki, then you and I are in agreement as far as that. Because back to your point, which I didn't interrupt, is that, like, a lot of people are torn on Dolander because of the horrific environment for pitching, and a lot of people can't put him there, but the talent is too much. So I'm in agreement with you on Dolander being five.
Yeah, and I think just overall, like, you look at the crop and the talent of those guys, and it's significantly better than any other pitching prospect. Now, can other guys make a jump into that range? I believe so. But right now, like, my comfortability is with those six, if you include Sasaki, and saying, like, these are the top pitching prospects. And I think that everybody knows them. There's name value, there's performance value, there's underlying data value. Like, they check all the boxes that you want to see. And also the proximity factor. I mean, I know Painter, there's been the question of when he debuted. We've heard the July-ish thing, which is frustrating in a sense, but I get it. You know, Jobe's going to pitch the majority of the year in Detroit. I think Bubba Chandler's up May, early June. I think Dolander, you get 100 innings out of. And Schultz is probably the only one I have some questions about, just given the fact that they've babied him so much. He hasn't gone beyond four innings ever. I think that he's in, like, redrafts and, like, draft champion leagues, he's being drafted like he's going to pitch a lot this year. My personal belief is that Noah Schultz does not get more than, like, 30 innings in the majors. It's like a late August, early September call-up. That may be completely wrong read, because there has been reports today that him and Hagen Smith would see major league time, but I'm still in the camp that it's later in the year, and then they make a run at those PPI picks in 2026. But proximity is on all these guys' side, on top of the fact that their arm talents are just absolutely incredible. Like,
I want to talk about it. I do want to talk about that. We're not going to talk about Painter and Jobe. Those are my top two. Are you Painter then Jobe, or are you Jobe over Painter?
Yeah, I've got Painter and then Joe, but it's interchangeable. So I could go either way.
They're pretty close. I've got to see both of them at a pretty extensive degree as far as, like, the AFL goes. And I love everything that Painter's doing. But taking them out of it, the most interesting thing is, by your technical rank terms, Bubba Chandler's your number three pitcher. And I know you put a tweet out about him. Jeff Ponce, I know, put the number one
fastball. He does his article on Baseball America, the number one fastball out there. There's a ton of buzz on him. You've got Bubba Chandler as the number one guy. So just give a little synopsis on, you know, he jumped over because Noah Schultz is the next one I want to talk about, because I think there is kind of a defaultness that goes with just the craziness and just the arm angle of Noah Schultz and the power fastball slider, like that, those type of things. Someone tell me, you know, it's very Randy Johnson-esque of what Noah Schultz is going to bring, but Bubba Chandler jumps over him. So let's talk about that fastball and why he is your third prospect pitcher.
Yeah. So Chandler is just incredibly unique as a pitcher and an athlete. I mean, going back to his high school days, like he was a quarterback, he was a two-way baseball player, and he was committed to Clemson to do both. I think that's pretty well documented at this point, but I think that, you know, talking about it and knowing how great that is another thing. Like Clemson was coming off national titles in football, and he was going to play quarterback for them, and he was going to play shortstop and pitch on the baseball team. And that's a lot. He's a very athletic mover on the mound. The pitch data has been absurdly good since he debuted back in single A, and it's just substantially got better. Like I first saw him, I think in early May of 2023, he's with Greensboro, saw him several times that season, and it just got better and better. The question was the command. Like it was shaky command control at times. Like he was, you know, he would have innings where it was just like he had no clue where the ball was going to give up three walks in an inning, despite like the data on the pitches being absurd. And so he always kind of like banked on that upside. And then this year he kind of put it all together. It was still the elite stuff. He tweaked the slider a little bit. When I saw him, you know, the slider was more of a sweeper and he was registering like 15 to 18 inches of sweep. And he kind of converted that this year into like more of a gyro type slider that has shorter break, but still missed bats at a substantial rate. And his changeup is incredible. I think that's probably the most underrated aspect of his arsenal is that, you know, the changeup's in the upper 80s. It's like 17 inches of arm side fade with a lot of tumble to it. But the fastball, like you mentioned, I mean, the fastball is elite. He gets so much carry up in the zone. It's like 18 inches of vert pretty regularly from 5'8 release, which is, that's a very strong number from that release height. It's 97, 98. It's like 10 inches of horizontal run. He'll just like bore it in on right-handed hitters. And it's like got the rising and run effect and they can't touch it. Runs away from lefties. It's just a ridiculous pitch. And he began to locate it so much better in 2024, which then allowed all the results to come. Like it set up everything else. And I felt that was the most notable thing for Chandler. And the difference in 2023 to 2024 is just his command was so much better. He was throwing strikes at a much higher clip. And that arsenal, I think, has the recipe to be one of the better ones in baseball. I mean, it is in the minors. And the progress that he's made has been notable. He's still incredibly young, and I think he will continue to take steps forward. So, yeah, very exciting upside with Bubba Chandler, and I think the Pirates are ready to put him in that rotation. I think it's the Skeens route, what they did last year. I mean, there's no reason to continue to pitch this guy in AAA because he's just significantly better than everybody else there, and it's not that much of a competition for him at this point, given how good his stuff is.
I've always kind of been a little bit torn. Were they going to throw him in really early into that rotation when they've got guys like Braxton Ashcraft and stuff like that? Like Ashcraft made some good moves, but you know, from a talent perspective, like the workings of Bubba Chandler and from the stuff perspective, it's really Jared Jones is kind of a template. Even I say, you say Skeens, I almost say like Jared Jones is even kind of the template of like why Bubba Chandler could be up there. But they do have like a glut of it. And as you had pointed, a two-way player, I believe he's only 2 years removed. Yep. Two years removed from being a two-way player. So then...
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, fellas, here's how it works. $15 for it.
In this league.
What's this?
In this league.
If you have to ask, big man, you can't afford it.
That's $4.
Let's turn it over to Noah Schultz. Noah Schultz, by virtue of everything we've talked about, is no slouch here because he's still 19. He's just two pitching spots lower. What's the differentiating factor for Noah Schultz? I'm in agreement with you, by the way. I'm not sure we see... And take proximity out of this, by the way. I want to not talk about proximity with Schultz versus Bubba Chandler. But I also believe like you're not going to see as much Noah Schultz as people are expecting in the major leagues. But, you know, he's had some missed time. He's had some injuries and stuff. What is the holdback, or what is the differentiating side of Bubba Chandler versus Noah Schultz for you?
Not a lot. I mean, you're having him pretty much back to back in the rankings. It's not a big differentiator. Schultz is absurd. I mean, when I first saw him, like the first game of the series with Winston-Salem, he walked out with the team. It's like, holy crap, this guy's just massive. I mean, yeah. He is every bit of 6'9". Like, there's no doubt about that. And with that kind of player, you don't expect him to have the command that he does, because typically those long arm, long lever, big frame guys typically spray the ball a bit more. But Schultz does not do that. Like, Noah Schultz is a pretty strong strike thrower with really good command for his size and the extension that he gets. You know, his fastball lives in the 94, 96 range. It was up to 98 when I saw him this year with good arm side run. Like, it's not going to be a pitch that like wows you on the IVB. Everybody gets so fixated on IVB, but it doesn't matter all that much in my opinion because of the uniqueness of it, the arm slot, release height on it, and how well he hides the ball and it just jumps on you given the extension. I think he could still add velocity. Like, I wouldn't be shocked. We're talking about somebody that will be 21 on opening day. So more velocity coming on that frame. Wouldn't be shocked to see it all. That slider is a heavy sweeping slider. It's 79 to 83, like up to 15 inches pretty regularly from the sweep standpoint. And he's got an upper 80s changeup too, which I think was the significant progress that I saw from seeing him in 2023 when he was with Kannapolis to 2024 when I saw him with Winston-Salem, was that changeup had progressed a ton. You know, I think the fastball slider could be 70 grade pitches, and I wouldn't argue or bat an eye. And the changeup right now is like, it flashes to be an average offering, but the progress I think is worth noting because I think that there could be another level still with that changeup. And I think that like you look at him and it's like, okay, like this guy has the makings of being a successful starter. So we haven't seen him handle a starter's workload. I mean, capping at four innings is fine. I understand babying him, but now we're looking at two straight seasons of that. And I really want to see the reins be let off of him and see what he can do. Can he go six? Can he go six for a month straight? Like, those questions I'd still like to see answered versus Chandler. I've seen him do that quite a bit. You know, like we've seen Chandler handle that starter's workload, build up innings. And I think that that's probably the slight difference for me is that Chandler has a better combo of three pitches and just the ability to go deeper into starts. And with Schultz, you know, the changeup could come along and be right there with Chandler. And I think also we could see that step forward from him from a durability standpoint and be able to go six. And then I feel a lot better. But I mean, I think we're splitting hairs, you know, regardless. And I think both are very, very talented arms.
I think they're prime examples of what we're talking about, where people get fixated on the numerical side of ranks. And it's like, what I see from you is you've just, and I love it, you've more dictated, this is a tier of pitching. It's like, hey, if you can get Bubba Chandler, you can get Noah Schultz, you can get Chase Dolander, you're getting that tier two, which is, you might even argue it's a 1B. Like 1A is kind of like Painter Job, and then obviously like one infinity is Roki. But then like 1B is that group of three, which I think I, for the most part, I have like a different ordering of it. And I have like one other guy that's thrown into that, which is not too far off. I'll just throw him out here because he didn't make this episode or end up making it. But like Kumar Rocker is someone that I throw into this simply because of like the return of the fastball, which inherently has returned to his slider becoming one of the most dominant pitches in baseball. Like, he's finally throwing strikes again. He has that sinker with the fastball. So it's kind of have, you have this new two plane version of a fastball that sets up that slider. And it was, you know, 47% K percentage in the majors last year. Like, he's back, like he's revived. So I think he kind of belongs in part of the conversation, but you would probably look at like, maybe he's more slight little above on the proximity, maybe slight floor versus ceiling. I would say Schultz is the ceiling. I'd say all those guys' ceiling is like a bit higher, but I think Kumar on the proximity is kind of in that general range. I know you don't have him in the top 25, but you don't have him far off. I think you had him at like mid 30s or something
like that. Yeah, that's like not far. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right, but I have that grouping. I've got Schultz as my number three after Job and Painter, and then Dolander, and then Bubba in there. And I might be, eat a little bit on the Bubba side. Let's talk about some of these hitters. That there were a couple power hitters that we were talking about here. And you got Kobe Mayo and Bryce Eldridge. So I think we went up to 15. You had Kobe Mayo at 14. You had Dalton Rushing at 15. I had Felton Silston at 14, Bryce Eldridge at 15, and then Kobe Mayo at 16. And then starting at 16, you have Bryce Eldridge. So we have Kobe Mayo and Eldridge like super close to each other in this general range. Kobe definitely has a proximity game to him. He also has, I think, a version of prospect fatigue, and that we saw him. He was horrific in his debut, and people feel that. Eldridge, I don't think, is quite as close as everybody else thinks, but let's talk about both of them. A lot of high praises lately on Kobe Mayo, which is great to see from that prospect fatigue side. Let's talk about your number 14 and number 16, Kobe Mayo and Bryce Eldridge.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting how quickly people have jumped off the Kobe Mayo bandwagon. Just quick to say that he's no good, that he's not going to make it because 40 plate appearances. Like, I think that it's pretty stupid to get prospect fatigue that quick, if I'm just being blunt. I mean, thrown in a bad situation in the middle of a playoff run and expecting a prospect to perform, like, that's absurd expectations. I'm not particularly worried about Mayo long term. I'm worried about him finding time this year. Like, I don't know how he fits into that lineup in 2025, but long term, I still love the bat. You know, I think the power's there. And we saw the contact strides with Mayo in 2024, where I think you can look at him and firmly say now, like, this is an average type hitter, you know, as a 50 grade from that kind of scouting standpoint. And I think Eldridge also made that stride where he can be put in that conversation. His contact rates improved significantly month over month. Outside of a bad July, I think it was where it was down a little bit and he struck out more. But you look at a rolling chart of Eldridge K rate throughout the year, and it's just going down.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, in this league.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Huh?
Who would have thought?
Not me.
Not me.
Not me.
Who would have thought?
Not me.
Not me.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Who would have thought?
Not me. Not me.
Diving off the cliff, which is great to see. And the power is absurd with both. I think Eldridge ran like a 9th percentile of like 107 miles an hour, and Mayo was right in line with him in the 106 to 107 range, which is, you know, pretty eye-popping power, especially for like Eldridge, who was 19. Big guy, you know, he's like 6'7". Mayo's a big guy too, but not as tall. But the long levers from Eldridge, you look at him and I think there can be reason to worry at times. Like, will he strike out too much? And he's probably going to run streaks because a lot of those bigger, longer lever hitters do.
He showed that, by the way, I want to throw in. He showed that in the AFL. There's a couple versions of it. Like, reading anything into the AFL, you don't want to go nuts with. He was visibly like exhausted from the season, and that's one of the reasons that he left. He left halfway through, really before all you guys got out there. It was like the week before he was taken off the roster because of that. But he was ate up by that almost the entire time. So much so that I know there were some scouts that got there early on, killed some prospects they saw in the first week of the AFL, which probably wasn't maybe the best thing. Eldridge looked slow. He was eating everything low in the zone. He was just trying to hit high fastballs in the AFL. And like, I think it exposes still maybe some of the like maturity side of the game that still has to be done, which is like pitch recognition. I would say the same thing about Zaire Hope. Like, I love Zaire Hope, but you know, he was like strict fastball, like destroyer of fastballs, but you can make an entire career off of that, but there's still some like exposing of you know, if you throw him high in the zone and you get that depth plane, and then all of a sudden you're going to drop him breakers out, he's going to eat that stuff. Same thing kind of going on with Eldridge. And that's just about like pitch recognition and discipline. And I think Eldridge is learning that. Another player that is like a year removed from being a theoretical two-way player. They just killed that this past year. But I just wanted to throw that out there, that he was showing exactly what you were talking about, because that week before he left, he had just started to pick it up. Hit some crushing, some doubles, some easy. He had this easy power opposite field at Giant Stadium that looked like, oh, that sucker is going to be a, you know, just a fly out. And it ended up getting out of the stadium. He did that type of stuff. Then they got that week and then they got him out. They were just like, okay, good. We got some good positives. Get out of here. No more. But he has some streakiness to him, and he probably has a little bit more runway versus Mayo as far as development goes, when people are kind of casting him to the majors already. And I think that's silly this year.
Yeah. I don't think Eldridge is going to be up. Like, honestly, I wouldn't shocked if he went back to AA. I know he reached AAA by the end of the year. They were just trying to get him more work, which they pushed him real aggressively for his first year. And for a 19-year-old, yeah, sending him AAA for the final week of the season and then going to the AFL. I know he left the AFL early, but that's a substantial workload for a young player like that. But I think everybody's thinking, oh, he'll be in AAA for 2 months and go to the majors. I don't really think that's the case. Like, I think that we're going to see him go to AA, spend a couple months there, and then spend a couple months in AAA and probably still be prospect eligible heading into 2026, unless the Giants are just like on a run and could use his bat, which, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how that shakes out. That's not knocking the talent at all, because we know the talent's there. That's just being realistic about the Giants aren't pushing a kid that just turned 20 in September, if I'm not mistaken, and saying, hey, you're our first baseman right now. Like, that's not going to happen, I don't think.
100% agree with that. So Kobe Mayo versus Bryce Eldridge is a really interesting grouping there. And you had it. I think the only opposite is I had Eldridge over for the upside than Mayo, but we kind of both have him in that territory. I'm going to bring this back up. I think I accidentally deleted this. You're going to have to remind me as I bring this back up. Who was your 20 here? Because I had Carson Williams in here, and I think I got rid of Carson somehow in my deleting, because at 16, I have Kobe Mayo. You have Bryce Eldridge. At 17, I have Emmanuel Rodriguez. You have Bubba Chandler. 18, I got Samuel Basayo. You've got Dolander. 19, I've got Lawler. You got Noah Schultz. I have 20 Carson Williams. Who did you have at 20?
Carson Williams was at 21. I had DeVries at 20 and Williams at 21.
That's who it was. Okay, so Leo DeVries at 20 for whatever reason, me getting rid of that. Let's talk about Carson Williams then here for a second. Carson Williams, another one of those guys who was a year ago AFL, big defensive wizard, shown off some really good tools. He considers him a higher-end defensive player, but the bat is still coming alive. He went and played for the Premier 12 USA League this past year with like Matt Shaw. Kind of plays out really well. And, you know, there's an opening. There's a proximity opening. But I think the big question is, like, where is the offensive tool side going to continue? Give me your scouting reports and thoughts on Carson Williams.
Yeah, Williams is a everyday major leaguer thanks to his glove. I mean, he's a gold glove shortstop with a really good arm. And it's electric to watch him play shortstop. You saw him in the AFL, obviously. I saw him in the AFL. I saw him when he was in high A as well. But the bat's pretty solid, too. You know, you look at the power-speed blend, and it's exceptional. I mean, Carson Williams hits the ball.